Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So Jake, putting aside whether you think Drew McIntyre actually has a chance to end Roman Reigns' title reign tomorrow, how do you think WWE collectively and Drew McIntyre in particular did in terms of maximizing doubt amongst WWE viewers and fans that it's sort of inevitable Reigns will win besides the hometown setting that was sort of built into this from the beginning?
Well, I think he was given about as much as anybody has ever gotten over on the Bloodline, you know, yeah. Single-handedly destroying both Roman and all of his cronies in the big revenge segment at the end of the show is about as good as anybody has looked going up against Roman. And I think Drew is charismatic enough on the microphone and carries himself well enough that I think they're in a position where, you know, 2 years of Roman Reigns as you know, world champion, and I guess, you know, roughly 6 months of him now as the undisputed champion, this is probably the most threatened he's felt outside of maybe those Brock Lesnar matches.
If we heard Roman Reigns went down with a back injury, needed back surgery, and was going to miss 9 months, has Drew McIntyre shown you enough in this last month that you think, more than you did a month or 2 months ago, that WWE might be okay if he were the top guy? Or does it jump out to you that, no, if Reigns went down and they really needed to build around somebody else, heel or face, it would be a number of candidates. Drew might be among them, but not necessarily the obvious top candidate.
I think they damaged him to a degree, you know, with the sword gimmick and some of the goofier angles that he was a part of. You know, it wasn't a perfect situation to have him, you know, claim this title shot a couple of months ago and then, you know, sort of make it inevitable that this was going to be the match. But I think they've done a decent enough job of making people prepared to think that if you know, Drew wins this match, that he could carry the show. I think the adjustments they've made since Paul Levesque took over creatively, you know, dropping some of the more, I guess, flamboyant elements of Drew's character work has improved my sense of where he's headed, you know, as a character as well. So I think he would be near the top of that list. And just given the timing with NFL football starting back up and, you know, potentially more stars returning on the horizon, I think, you know, if Roman was going to take time off and come back towards the end of the year to start building towards WrestleMania, I don't think they'd be in nearly as bad of a spot as I would have said they were, you know, 2 months ago or something.
So I'll cut right to it. I intentionally tried to avoid it in my first phrasing of the question, but do you think there's a chance Drew wins tomorrow? And if that happens, do you end up looking at it going, well, this is weird, I hope they can make sense and justify this? Or do you look at that and go, yeah, smart move. Drew's got momentum. Roman can handle the loss. It shakes things up going into fall. It doesn't feel like a hotshot move, but it might have an effect of shaking things up. Like, what would kind of be your mindset if Drew's holding up that title tomorrow afternoon?
Well, I think it offers them some more opportunity. I would not be shocked if Drew McIntyre won in Cardiff. And that's something that maybe would have shocked me with previous Reigns title defenses. And the reason I say that is because I think they need to split up these championships. And with you don't want to have, you know, Roman Reigns taking television losses to split titles. But they might get more creative with how they present Drew McIntyre, particularly if he's going to be on both weekly television shows, carrying both titles, maybe defending it on television more than, say, Roman Reigns was with his limited schedule. And you might get him, you know, worn down to the point where somebody might be able to grab one of those titles and take it back to Raw, maybe a Seth Rollins, for instance. And so I think, if anything, moving the titles off of Reigns now might give them the flexibility to be in a better position to bring Reigns back towards the end of the year and have him, you know, come back to SmackDown, where there's just one Universal Champion and he can put his focus there. Or perhaps they'll have something, you know, put together for him at WrestleMania with his very famous cousin.
Yeah. Sammy and the Usos tonight. Has it been as much of a highlight for you in the build as it has for me? And what did you think of what we saw tonight? Because I say this with the tone that I have, because boy, did they build this up. And we didn't get a lot ultimately from it in terms of Roman, but we got quite a bit with multiple segments, including in the ring, of Sammy interacting with Usos, with, I think, the delightful dynamic between Jay and his utter disgust with Sammy, and Jimmy seeming mused or even just genuinely fond of Sammy for some reason. What do you think of kind of two things, the Sammy Usos dynamic, but also was that enough given how much they hyped up those video packages that really they didn't deliver Reigns much at all other than just a blind boot to the face when he got out of the car?
Well, I think they didn't want Roman to be down at ringside to be cleaned up along with his henchmen. So I think it was, you know, it was sort of necessary to have him taken out backstage so that it, you know, it wasn't essentially Drew taking out all four men all by himself down at ringside during a celebration. And so I think they were just a victim of the setup here. But as far as the Sammy and the Usos interactions, I've enjoyed the heck out of them. I think Sammy is exactly the kind of character that would rub Jey Uso the wrong way. And I think they've played it off extremely well. And Jimmy, for his role, you know, he looks like he's, you know, he's just barely containing his laughter at inappropriate times. And so
totally.
I think that,
yeah.
And I think that works. You know, it's, where I assume that it's going is that we're, you know, eventually Sammy is going to be clued into the fact that he's just been a rube and, you know, he'll join Kevin Owens and perhaps challenging the Usos for those tag titles down the line. But I don't think they need a rush to get there.
Yeah, I don't think there's a rush either. Is Sammy, you talked about like Drew being damaged by the sword and certain things. Has Sammy been defined down too much based on being such a goof for so long that it'd be hard to get him back to where some originally thought he might be when he was in NXT before he made it to the main roster? Or is what he's going through actually setting him up for a, and I've kind of argued this, like a bigger change in his presentation, such a big change in the presentation of his character that it'd be more believable that he'd suddenly be more credible in the ring. For instance, Kevin Owens has been sort of borderline first, second tier for a long time, and sometimes treated as a semi-big deal, other times sort of forgotten about. And it's harder to just go, okay, you were always kind of wanted to see him as the top guy, and we sort of teased that he was at times. He visited there. Now, really, he's there. And it's like, really? I don't know. I don't know if we believe you now, or I don't know if I buy it. He's sort of defined in a spot. But Sammy can have this sort of transformative moment where he leaps up a couple levels because of what he's going through with these big names.
I think Sammy has been so entertaining with everything that they've ever given him that I don't think he'd have a problem, you know, flipping the switch, returning to being a more serious character and ascending back up the card. Because I think no matter where he's been or how goofy he's been tasked with being, he's won people over. And so I think they'll go on that journey with him. I think people would be ready for that. It's not like Drew where he's basically this, you know, chiseled like from marble, like Greek god of sorts, who, you know, kind of looks silly waving a sword around and cutting the ropes and talking in sing-songy rhymes and everything else, where I think Sammy has the personality where that stuff just sort of slips off of him like Teflon. I think he'll be absolutely fine.
How big can – I mean, we're jumping a little off Clash at the Castle here and SmackDown, but how big can Sammy be in 3, 6, 9, 12 months in the roster? Can he be like a number two babyface for several years on one of the two shows?
I think he could be right. I mean, I don't know if they would position him as somebody who could carry – a show, you know, he wouldn't be somebody like where I would presume they'll slot Cody Rhodes when he comes back, for instance. But I think he could be, yeah, he could be a gatekeeper babyface, and he could absolutely be comfortable there. He's got an underdog quality to him. I mean, that was basically what made his NXT gimmick so special. And I don't think he'd have any problem slipping back into that and being a guy that people would take seriously and want to go on a journey with. And he could, you know, eventually, in the right scenario, with the right story, win a world championship at some point. I don't know if he'd be a perennial champion or a long-term champion, but he's somebody that they would definitely consider for that at some point.
It's interesting when they have the IC and US title not treated as prestigious titles for so long, when someone holds it, it doesn't feel like this big defining moment like it did in the 80s and at times in the 90s to hold that secondary title in the WWF. So when there's two titles, you can kind of think, well, they'll be the main champion, you know, whether it's Universal or WWE, the John Cena, but then there'll be a secondary champion, you know, JBL and Edge, somebody who, Alberto Del Rio, Sheamus, somebody who isn't like clearly the face of the company, but is the world champion, and they position them there. And that, like when you say, oh, Sammy could be world champion someday, I'm still kind of caught up in that mode of, well, if they had two world titles, he could get the secondary version of the two world titles. I would love if they keep the titles unified for Sammy to actually hold the unified Universal WWE title, but I think it's more likely he becomes world champion someday if they split him off and they have two. But he's doing such good work, I don't even want to eliminate the possibility. He just holds both belts or a unified belt if WWE sticks with one single world champion. I just don't think it would be a long stretch, but I think it would be a welcome stretch. You know, we could have the summer of Sammy, like we sort of had the summer of Daniel Bryan as a breakout star. It'd be different circumstances, and he'd be the world champion. But for a stretch of time, I think people would love to be part of a Sami Zayn world championship run, you know, for like I said, even if just a few months.
Yeah, I'd be on board. Yeah, I think his eventual – you know, babyface turn and, you know, whenever that switch flips where he becomes a little bit more self-aware of, you know, how he's been treated by the bloodline, that first time he comes out to his old music, it's going to be nuts. You know, people love that character and they enjoy, you know, him as a babyface. And I think they'd be on board for a world title run. I don't know, you know, what the story would be, or, you know, I'm sure it would have to be a the right set of circumstances would come to pass where that would happen. But it's certainly something that I'd look forward to if they wanted to slot him in that role.
All right, let's pause and introduce the show and then move on to the color portion. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 2nd, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the publisher, editor, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, including the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter documenting pro wrestling history in real time since the late 1980s. And also the website, pwtorch.com, delivering news, editorials, live TV and pay-per-view coverage, and more every day updated with new content. Hope you're checking that out, bookmark it, or add a tab on your phone browser. And also the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members. I also host Everything with Rich and Wade, and The Fix with Todd Martin for VIP members. And also VIP exclusive post pay-per-view and PLE event roundtables following major events from WWE and AEW. We'll have a double header for VIP members this weekend. So great time to go VIP. Not only will I be hosting post-event roundtables for VIP members where we run down the show and give our thoughts on it for about an hour, but Greg Parks will be hosting Wrestling Night in America both after The Clash and after All Out. This weekend, Saturday and Sunday, respectively. So you can look for a link to that show in my coverage of those shows Saturday afternoon and Sunday night. There'll be a live link to the live stream so you can listen live and hear what people are saying, including Greg, right after the events, and also participate as a caller. So look for that link at the top and bottom of my pay-per-view reports and also sent out on our Twitter account at PWTorch. It's such a busy weekend. We got so much coming up. And so, like I said, it's a great time to go VIP. And you can get not only all the VIP shows, but all of our free podcasts throughout the week with the ads and plugs removed. Full details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. We are live tonight following SmackDown, even though SmackDown was not live. It was recorded last Friday. The other voice you hear live on the show tonight is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. Jake, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks, Wade. Always happy to be here.
Good to have you. Be sure you're checking out his Jake's work over at ProWrestling.net, including his written report on SmackDown tonight. He also joins Jason on the .NET Members Podcast, their weekly flagship. He's a top-shelf analyst in this industry, and you should listen to everything he says. Hi, Jake.
Thanks, Wade. Well,
what's your Twitter account so people can follow you?
You can find me at Barnett Jake. It's two T's in Barnett. I look forward to the follows. Thanks for letting me throw the plug out there.
Of course, yeah. All right, well, let's get to calls. And we'll begin with Mike in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Mike, welcome. Good to hear from you. What do you think of the show tonight?
For a taped show, I thought the show was really good, actually. A lot of good little things happening. You know, actually, like the Ronda Rousey Adam Pearce segment I thought was really good. Killer Cross's debut was really good. I enjoyed the ending. So, yeah, for a taped show, I thought it was, you know, pretty solid. And I guess I'll start on the Ronda Rousey segment. I thought, first off, Ronda Rousey, she's so over. I know Wade, some fans brought it up a couple weeks ago about at the house show in Atlantic City when her and Baszler teamed up, you know, how big the pop was for the both of them. And, yeah, she got one of the biggest pops of that night, too. And, by the way, Wade, Rousey, in person, like you were saying about on the flagship about Shayna Baszler, like Rousey looks smaller in person. Like she doesn't come off as scary either, even though you know that she really is. Her and Baszler both, actually. I mean, yeah, actually, I took a picture of Baszler, met her and everything. She was really cool, really nice, you know, laid back, real cool with the fans. So yeah, she's actually, you know, a really nice person. But, yeah, it's funny you mentioned that on the flagship, Wade, about how she, Shayna Baszler doesn't come off as, you know, scary in person. Yeah, you're right. And they both, they're smaller in person, especially when you see them in, like, in their regular clothes, you know?
And it doesn't matter as long as they're framed a certain way on TV. You know, just for people who didn't hear that, the context was I think Vince McMahon might have met Shayna Baszler and said, you're not intimidating. We can't portray you as a killer in the ring because he's just so much bigger than her, and she is, so she's just nice and laid back. But Paul Levesque knows, I think, well, not that it clearly, it's self-evident. He knows how to push her as a badass threat in the ring more than Vince McMahon did and believes in her more. And we're going to see that, you know, continue, I think, including tomorrow at the Clash.
Yeah, I'm just wondering where they go with Rousey. Like if she's eventually going to team with Baszler, they're going to be a team and they're going to go after the tag team titles. Like, I don't know. I think maybe they take the belts off Aaliyah and Raquel, and then Sasha and Naomi go after Rousey and Shayna Baszler. I could see that happening maybe by Extreme Rules, them doing that match. So, because I'm not sure, like, if they're going to put Rousey in the SmackDown title scene again. I'm not sure what's going to all be Liv and Shayna Baszler, but yeah, I guess my question will be, is like between Liv and Shayna Baszler, who do you think goes over, and then what happens with Rousey in the future? Does she form a team with Shayna Baszler, and do they go after the belts, and who do they feud with? What do you think about all that?
Yeah, well, let me throw to Jake first on that. Where do you think Rousey and Baszler in particular are headed, or collectively or individually?
Well, they did have that brief confrontation on television not that long ago where, you know, Shayna was essentially telling Ronda that, you know, she'd have a lot better luck getting her way if she played by the rules, and Ronda was, you know, essentially looked down at her for that opinion and told her that she used to be a killer. And so I would think they'd probably have them feuding before they would put them together as a tag team. So I don't know how the outcome of the Clash is going to play out. I don't know if Ronda is over in the UK, but if she's somehow involved in the finish of that match tomorrow, then I would assume that we see some kind of triangle develop between Liv, Shayna, and Ronda over that championship, probably going into the fall.
How big of a star can Shayna Baszler be, and is she damaged or not really? You know, we talked about Sammy maybe you know, having to overcome how he's been portrayed, but maybe being able to do it. How about Shayna?
I think you can rescue anybody. I'm not a, you know, a believer that somebody is ever so damaged that their character can't be rescued. It's just how relatable can they be, whether you know, heel or babyface. Can they connect with the audience with a new character or a new presentation? And I think Shayna, you know, they don't necessarily have to go back to the exact same formula that they use with her in NXT, but I think there's much more to mine from her, particularly if, you know, her and Rousey are able to explore, you know, their interpersonal relationship, and that brings out a different side of her. That certainly could revive her in, you know, in the eyes of mainstream fans. And so, no, I don't think she's too damaged. I think she could be prominently featured, and with Paul Levesque in charge and how much he seems to enjoy her work, I assume that she will be.
Mike brought up the segment with Ronda and Adam Pearce. It seems like there's been a bit of a journey since Levesque took over, to try to figure out how to best or better at least portray Ronda Rousey in the WWE context as a babyface. I think that's what they're going for here, you know, putting her up against an authority figure. I kind of watch and find myself on Team Adam Pearce when Ronda interacts with him, because she's this rich, famous, badass, petulant main event star who's hard to manage and can't handle losing and overreacts to everything, and the world revolves around her. And I don't find that attractive or appealing or admirable. And Adam Pearce is this poor middle management guy who's overworked and underappreciated, leaned on for too much, but he's got a mortgage to pay and a family to support. And he's got to show up and do his thing and deal with all these personalities. I just find myself sympathetic to Pearce. Now, I'm not saying that's the majority of WWE fans see it that way, but I don't think it's just so cut and dry that you're just rooting for Rousey in these situations, because she didn't have the bond with fans that I think backs up her being as difficult as she is. And I think we've seen sides of Ronda, even when she's trying to be a babyface, that make me empathize with what Pearce is going through. Do you think I'm in a small minority in how I react to that? Or do you think they're finding their way and it's actually kind of working, and, you know, crowd reactions obviously count more than the feeling that I have after watching those segments?
I don't think the majority of people have much sympathy for middle managers. And so there may be some that, you know,
there is that, yeah,
Pierce's side, but he just kind of comes across as a sniveling middle manager, because he went out of his way, you know, to praise the board of directors for their decision-making and everything, but he still had beef with Ronda Rousey. And so it's like, it's kind of like the phrase that, you know, the crap always rolls downhill. You know, he's taking crap from the talent, and he's also taking crap from senior management. And so he's in a rather unenviable position. But I don't think he's going to get much sympathy. I think he's more likely to get laughs from, you know, from live crowds while Ronda beats him up. But I hope they don't stick with that sort of as a feud long term. It seemed like something for her to do while she was working through this rather awkward suspension where she gets to appear on television every week anyway. And I think the thing working most against Ronda is Ronda. You know, she goes out there every week and she's like, she's making an appearance at traffic court. She doesn't even look like she's excited to be there at all. You know?
Yes. Yeah, that is a good description. I've been looking for one, and that totally worked.
And her, you know, her verbal delivery is always kind of dry. But despite
why would you say that, Jake? Why would you say that it's dry? I don't talk too fast in one tone. Okay.
Yeah. But despite all that, she gets great reactions, and she's absolutely right about being one of the most recognizable female athletes. And so, you know, I think that hopefully, you know, as they work through this creatively, they find a way to make her appear more sympathetic if they want to keep her as a babyface. But I think she's a heel, and I think she'd be a fantastic heel if they let her be one.
Well, she's got to be okay with being a heel, too. You know, I mean, that's part of the issue is I just don't know if she likes being booed. I don't think she's in on, like, how this whole thing works. That's a feeling I get. Like, when people are booing you, it doesn't really mean they're hostile and don't like you. It means you're playing a role and the fans are reacting. I mean, obviously some get wrapped up in it, but sometimes I just sense that she wants to be beloved, but she doesn't. But she just isn't a natural baby face, and all the money they're paying her is better served with her as a heel, but it's difficult to get her to see things that way. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'd
be surprised if Paul Levesque couldn't convince her to have fun being a heel. But
yeah,
maybe yeah. You know, maybe that isn't her thing, and she's resisting it. But at some point, I think, you know, she has to realize that she can have just as much fun antagonizing fans. She doesn't seem to have any problem going after people in the crowd when they say something that she doesn't agree with. And so I don't know why she wouldn't want to lean into those natural tendencies. It's worked wonders for Roman Reigns' career.
Yes. You talk about her like she is as reasonable and rational to deal with as the average wrestler. And I just get the sense she's not. Yeah. But point made otherwise. Mike, I'll throw back to you now.
I mean, yeah, I got to admit, I did enjoy Adam Pearce getting put in the arm bar, like, especially at the end when he called her the B word, right? At the end?
Yep.
So I enjoyed that.
Yes, he did.
I never realized he was so good on the mic. I was like, wow, yeah, you guys agree? I mean, he sounded good on the mic.
He's got lots of practices as...
Scrap iron was a good promo. Yeah, he's very good.
I beat you to scrap iron by 1/10 of a second. Yes, scrap iron can cut promos.
Do you guys think it was believable? Like Rousey took him down and put him in the armbar. Like I think it was because like she's just like she's a technician. She's great. So I mean, do you guys think it was believable though?
1000%. Yes, Jake.
Yeah, no, I thought the whole segment worked. Other than, Ronda's delivery at times, I thought everything that they did seemed like the crowd bought into it, the whole way. So it was a success as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, and I'll touch on Liv Morgan and for Shayna Baszler. Like, what do you think they got to do to get Liv Morgan, back on top? I mean, I think she's got to get a good victory over Shayna Baszler, even if it's just by roll-up. But make it definitely a clean victory. I mean, they damaged Liv, at SummerSlam with that finish, with her tapping and then just always, getting beat up. I mean, she had that one good win over Shelsey, that was good that one week. But, she hasn't been really showcased enough to show what she can do in the ring ever since she's been the champion. So I think this is a good test for her as the champion against Baszler. And if they give her a nice win over her, I think she could probably bounce back on top possibly. What do you guys think?
Jake, what do you think?
Well, I would agree that they've sort of set her up for failure. The mistimed tap out at 2 rather than at the 3 count and looking outclassed by both Ronda and Shayna whenever they've appeared on television together. Since then, it hasn't been, an excellent, portrayal for her. And so I don't think she's gotten a chance to show her best. She was at her best when she was over on Raw as a plucky underdog chasing Becky Lynch. And I think they saw something in her at that point and they were correct to, but then they completely flipped 180 and made her a weak champion that lacked credibility. And I'm not sure why that decision was made, but I don't know necessarily how if there's a perfect finish for her, against Shayna where, she gets a huge boost of credibility and you don't do a major, blow to Shayna's credibility. I think that's where we probably see Ronda or somebody get involved. But I think Liv is going to retain. I just don't know if they're committed to making her appear strong in any way at this point.
All right, cool. Mike, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I'll touch on Drew versus Roman. I'm excited for the match. I do think Drew has a chance, but I think Reigns is going to get the victory. I think Cross is going to cost Drew the match, and then Cross and Drew will feud all the way up to Survivor Series probably, and then we'll get Cross versus Reigns at the Survivor Series. And in the meantime, Kevin Owens will probably face Roman Reigns over on Raw. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like Kevin Owens is going after – he did say he was going after the world title, Reigns, so – that's what I would predict. But, I mean, I don't know. Does that make sense, though? Because Reigns is particularly on SmackDown. So what's your guys' take on that?
Well, in theory, Reigns should be on both shows because he's a champion representing both shows, even though he's not, and as I point out, he's not even in the opening theme to Raw. even though he is the champion of Raw. They include Brock, who's not around at all, but they don't include Reigns, who's the champion, who everybody on Raw should be aiming to defeat for the unified WWE Universal title, which is weird. But beyond that, there's a lot of moving parts, and I like that, Jake. I like that you have different people going after the champion on both shows, and you know, Karrion Kross as presumably a heel, not a tweener or babyface, but I'm not sure he's completely defined yet. He held on the put poor Drew Gulak in the sleeper after the bell, held on for a while. So, you know, that's not something a babyface does. He seems very much a heel, but he's also going after Roman. That's the only reason I hedge it all. And it'd be a weird dynamic to have Kross against Roman for the title, and because that would be inviting fans to cheer Reigns. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure how to feel about that, other than having Kross talk about Roman quickly elevates Kross into the realm of eyeing the champion. But I think it's more likely, as Mike points out, Jake, we're going to see Karrion Kross interact with Drew in some form or fashion. I hope it's not involved in the finish. I just think world title matches should be protected, and you shouldn't have two immovable objects facing each other. I can imagine both men winning, but neither man losing is kind of the position that I think some fans are in. And if you just do the escape hatch, oh, we'll have Kross interfere, I think it's a groaner of a finish that might protect Drew but doesn't protect WWE and major matches. So I'm on edge about that. How about you?
Yeah, I hope that's not the direction they're going here. I mean, I think that Kross does have some upside, you know, facing somebody like Drew, but I would prefer them to do the title change and have those two face off in a title feud, rather than, you know, having Drew cost it, or, you know, having Kross cost Drew the match and go through some convoluted finish that involve, you know, because then you're going to have the bloodline involved, and then you're going to have, you know, Kross involved, all to keep the title off of Drew McIntyre, who would then apparently be, you know, sent back into limbo for months without another title shot. And so that seems like the least attractive of the possible outcomes to me. But I do think Kross will be a major player, and I'm sure he'll be after both, you know, whoever ends up with that title after the clash. But I'm almost inclined to say it might be Drew, but I, you know, there's no certainty involved there. But it's like, is Roman taking some time off? Like, has anybody, I haven't heard that confirmed, but just given how many pieces they're placing around the world championship, you got Seth Rollins talking about it, you got Karrion Kross talking about it, you got Kevin Owens talking about it, you know, heavily rumored that Braun Strowman could be returning as early as Monday. It seems like they're preparing for you know, the potential that Reigns might be away for a while is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and I don't know, and it's I'm in the realm, even though I'm a reporter and I want to report, you know, what's coming up. I also don't like to report things that give away anything about, because pro wrestling is basically like a, you know, series that drops on HBO or Netflix. It's like, I don't want reporters to be telling me, here's what's coming up in two episodes that you haven't watched yet, based on some actor, you know, stepping away from a show or something. So ideally, I don't know ahead of time, and I'm not sure why people would even want to chase that info down. Now, that said, if Roman is taking off, and I haven't heard that he is, that does not mean he's going to drop the title. You know, someone held up a sign on Raw saying, bring back the 30-day rule for title defenses. They don't have that. So he could actually go away and take the titles with him, and that could, you know, be an issue or not be an issue. And all these other people are part of fortifying the roster is to prepare for Roman and the belt being gone for a while after Roman retains on Saturday. I think that's, you know, a possibility. WWE's had absentee champions before. But we not under Paul Levesque, though.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to sort of postulate theories about, and there's no indication one way or the other, but it certainly seems like they're making that world title scene a lot busier than it has been, which I think is a good sign. I just don't know if that means that, you know, we're preparing for a period where, you know, like you said, the titles and the champion aren't going to be around as much, or he's going to be defending it a lot more frequently, but it could be, you know, interesting depending on which direction they decide to go.
Mike, any quick closing words before we move on?
Yeah, real quick, Wade, what'd you think of Kross's debut tonight? I know it was a squash match. You know, he wasn't supposed to take any bumps, but what'd you think?
Yes, well, I am eager to see if he takes bumps once he's in the ring against equal foes. Yeah, but he shouldn't be taking bumps for Drew Gulak, so I do not hold that against him. I thought he was good tonight. I think it was maybe the best promo I've seen him do in NXT/WWE. It felt less haunted house at the fair, snarling and kind of cartoonish, and it felt like I got a sense that I got to know the person, that Karrion Kross is a person who has a range of emotions, and he looked kind of fierce and menacing in a way that felt believable and not turned up to 150% because I'm on TV and I'm supposed to be unnaturally snarly. And so we didn't get any of those kind of just cartoonish freeze frame faces that he did that just drove me nuts and I thought would undercut his ability to get over. I think this is what I saw tonight in the vignette, and obviously he's always had a good ring entrance, and he's always hit great suplexes and good power moves. I thought that there was some subtraction of some annoying things, and the addition of the hair and his demeanor being a little looser and more natural makes me have more hope that he can be valuable in a supporting main event, semi-main event role. You know, having him beat Drew Gulak in about a minute is the right thing to do. What do you think, Jake?
I think the visual presentation is good. It's a world-class wrestling entrance. I don't know about, Scarlett doing the lip syncing and interpretive dance. I could take or leave that aspect of it. But from a character standpoint, I think there's something menacing about him. But the way that Kross talks and the subject matter that he talks about, it reminds me of like a video game villain, and not in like a great way. It's like, okay, this guy is gonna rant at me about quantum mechanics for 20 minutes before we actually start to fight, and that a part of it, it's not a home run for me. I think if he brought the conversation back down to earth a little bit, it would be a much more effective character. But there is upside there, and clearly, Paul Levesque sees him as somebody who could be a player. I do question, though, he looks really good in the ring against people like Drew Gulak. How does that power offense work once he gets in the ring with people like Drew and Roman, who are at his size or larger, and he doesn't look quite as intimidating?
That's the thing. I mean, I was trying to get a sense of how big he was compared to Drew Gulak, because Drew Gulak's a 205 guy, and they're not that different height-wise. I think they have exaggerated his height to a degree that it will look ridiculous when he's on, even ground with Drew McIntyre and even Roman Reigns. I mean, I shouldn't say ridiculous, but he's not going to tower over them. I think he's going to be noticeably inches shorter. I don't know if he's legit 5'10 or 6'1". I asked someone and they thought 6'1", but I think they were trying to be nice, but maybe that was an honest estimate. It's not that big of a deal in most cases, exactly how tall you are, unless you're portrayed the way Karrion Kross is portrayed, in which case I think it can be an issue if fan expectations don't match the visual when he finally stands, nose to nose or, forehead to chin with whoever he's opposite of. It's just his character. It worked better in an NXT-type roster with smaller wrestlers, but his match style, while he delivered fine, wasn't great. His work wasn't – he worked hard and had some decent ring work against really talented opponents, but it wasn't the right fit as a main eventer in NXT either. So, I mean, I think it's still a process to figure out how to utilize him, but clearly Paul Levesque, whether he has reservations or not, is investing TV time in him because he believes he'll get something out of it, and he's one of the better options that are readily available. I don't think we're going to see Kross – I don't know. I was going to say protected, but in a way you almost have to protect him, because if he starts losing, he becomes, I don't say useless, but much less useful if he does have him start losing regularly. I think you have to protect him to keep the veneer off that there's something there. But I think he's going to be best visiting the main event and then moving a notch or two down to a more supporting role pretty quickly. All right, Mike, appreciate all the topics, as always.
Yes, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the show tomorrow.
Thanks. Yep, you too. All right, we'll move to by the way, give out the number. If you're joining us live stream here and you want to in progress and you want to join the show, you can still call us 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558, even if that's just to predict the outcome of tomorrow's main event. Push 1 when you call. That flags you on our switchboard. All right, we'll go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me, Wade. You know, the first thing I really wanted to get into was I enjoy the journey that Drew has been – they've been able to get us on with Drew in what seems like a short period of time. He's been built up very strong, and I think that, you know, this is the first guy that I feel can beat Roman. And, you know, I may have mentioned this previously, but I really think he has a great chance. And, you know, but it would just feel so weird not having Roman as the champion, because he's been the champion and he's been so dominant. So it's like, I really feel like it can go either way, and that's a great feeling to have going into the show. I'm not sure I'd be super disappointed if Drew lost, but I do feel like Drew would be severely damaged if he did lose. And, you know, do you guys feel like they positioned it to the point where Drew really has to win, the proverbial must win for Drew McIntyre? Because where does he go, you know, from this point on? And I also think this is a true test for, you know, the Paul Levesque booking era, because as a performer, I don't foresee, you know, the performer at heart that Triple H is, I don't foresee him wanting to have shenanigans built into this match. So I think that we're going to get a straight-up finish, however it goes. And if Drew just gets beat clean by Roman, it's going to feel like a huge, huge loss for him, and it's going to be hard for him to come back. Like, I feel like if he wins, he's made. He ended this historic Roman title run, beat Brock Lesnar. Like, I feel like he got you a main event forever, and I also think he can go on a great run with the title. You know, it seems like they're lining up a lot of guys. He can go back and forth between shows and have a lot of – I think that the best route to take Drew on is, like, you know, the more is more route. You know, just get him a bunch of good matches in, back to back to back, and then play up, you know, the fatigue factor. You know, you set it up for a cash in, because now you get the Money in the Bank contract back involved. So I know I said a mouthful there, man. And, you know, what do you guys think about my soliloquy here?
Sure, yeah. Jake, Drew loses clean to Roman tomorrow. Let's say that happens. And then what, Cross comes out and beats him up or laughs or whatever. Is Drew just sort of damaged goods at that point, and it's going to be really hard to get him back to the top? And is that smart? I know Paul Levesque inherited this match. This was not his choice. It is very much the logical match for the setting, but it's not a match that he chose to book with a finish in mind. The match was booked, and now he's in charge of the finish. This will be the last of those. Your thoughts on what a setback it would be if Drew lost?
Well, I think, you know, if you listen to what Paul Levesque has said publicly about both of these guys, he views Roman Reigns as basically, you know, the best evangelist that pro wrestling has right now in terms of star power and bringing new fans into the business of professional wrestling. You know, he views him as that guy, but he's also made, statements that make you think that, you know, his preference would be that the champions be full-time and available to appear regularly on both television shows. And so I think you could probably make a case that, you know, he could be conflicted about which direction to go with this match. And if they do decide, to have Drew lose, I would think he would be protected in some way, whether that's, you know, the involvement of the Usos or Sami Zayn or Karrion Kross. I have a hard time believing that we're just going to see, you know, a straight up match where Drew loses, then he takes the spear and he loses clean. Now, that's not to say that there's a ton of shame in losing to a champion who has been as dominant for as long as Roman Reigns has. And so depending on how you structure the match, you know, you could have Drew show a lot of toughness and heart in defeat that carries over into his next feud, whatever that happens to be. So I don't think a Drew loss necessarily makes him unrecoverable damaged goods, but you're going to have to make people want to go on that journey again with him where he climbs back up the mountain and gets another title shot. And I don't think that would be anytime soon. It would have to be, you know, months and months down the road.
You also have to be careful about defining down Drew as the guy, as someone who can't beat Roman. And even if Drew just, hey, he puts up a good fight, he looked great, Roman got the better of him, it was fair. Drew says a better man won that night, as much as it hurts to say it, but he'll be back. And he says that, okay, let's say Roman is off doing other things, Hollywood, or just wants to, you know, go be alone with his, you know, tens of millions of dollars. Who's, you know, who's your best bet to kind of bridge you to the next big young star? Is Drew better than Seth Rollins and perhaps Cody Rhodes or Kevin Owens or Sammy? I mean, he might be if you protect him, but if you've really firmly established he's a notch below Roman in the ring, in the way WWE tells their stories in this narrative structure, it's hard to then say, pay to see the guy who's second best. You know, but he's really good, but he wasn't as good as the last guy, and that was proven over and over. I just think that's hard to draw that way, and I think Levesque knows that or thinks that. So that's where I think it is a conundrum this weekend for him, and I bet he is conflicted or, you know, not, maybe complacent. Maybe he definitely knows what he wants to do, but it's not an easy choice without without some pain involved, you know, in terms of what he's giving up in order. It's like any professional sports team that trades, you know, one or two or three players they really like to get somebody else or several others in return. You hate to give up something to get something. And tomorrow you're giving something up to get something else. And on balance with all of Levesque's considerations, he's got to make the call on what he's willing to give up in order to get the other. But something will be lost tomorrow, either the integrity of world title matches under the Levesque era on major shows because there's a screwy finish, or Drew will be defined down a bit, and there's no way to avoid that, I don't think. Or you'll have a lame interference finish, like I said. Or you end something really special with Roman, really special, that is defining of the era. And in you know, if Roman losing can be something that launches a whole new talent to a whole new level, and I'm not sure that Drew has that far to rise for beating Roman. And Todd Martin talked passionately about this on The Fix. There's only so many times that you have – it's infrequent that you have somebody with Roman's cachet right now with this reign, 733 days and counting, that you can cash out and pass along some of that to someone else. And Drew's in a better spot than I think any of us imagined 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. But is this the right – is he the right person to hand that over to? And I think that's – again, we're going to learn about Levesque's booking. It's fascinating. I'll throw back to Jay for any follow-up.
Wade, my man, that was an expert breakdown right there. You said everything that I would have liked to have said just so eloquently, man. Everybody involved has something to play for tomorrow. Like, it's a defining moment for everyone involved. If you end this historic run from Roman, it's like I think we all kind of wondering what's next for Roman. If Drew loses, and I'm sorry, man, I didn't catch the other gentleman's name who's on the show with you, but
Jake Barnett's on this week.
Okay, Jake. I disagree strongly with the idea that there's no shame in being beaten by Roman. Traditionally, yes, but for Drew, who has stood on this podium saying that you don't deserve to be champion because you're not putting in the work, because of the part-time schedule, for him to just go out there and lose, like, I mean, that is a defining down thing. I think who has that to play for. Like, I feel like Drew is positioned and can be positioned as an equal to Roman, like, even more so than a guy like Cody Rhodes. Like, even though Cody's hot and, you know, he was coming in, you know, with a lot of buzz, like, I genuinely don't look at Cody Rhodes next to Roman and think that Cody should beat Roman. Know that could happen, but Drew just feels like the guy who deserves it most. He feels like an equal, and I think that you can just like skyrocket him with beating Roman. And you know, but again, I don't know that that's totally a 100% the move to make. And that's something Triple H is going to really have to, like, go with. But I just don't think we can have a screwy finish, man, because, like Wade, you said, that defines the that puts a stain on what big championship matches mean. And, like, I'm also going to add one more thing, Jake, and maybe that's, like, something that Vince conditioned us to do is just, you know, prepare ourselves for, like, screwy finishes or prepare ourselves, oh, well, you know, he could take a loss and all this other crap. Like, the way Vince booked, in a lot of instances, it didn't make a lot of sense, and it was a lot of cop-outs, and it was a lot of bailouts, and I think that that's something we can hold, you know, booking going forward accountable to. Like, let's make this stuff matter. And I think that this is a great moment to make something really, really matter and make it meaningful.
I think you can also, if Drew wins, I think it's got to be a real commitment by Paul Levesque to go with Drew as his guy. And that's where it's painful to give up Roman, I assume, with, you know, contributions in thoughts from Paul Heyman and Roman, that there would be an idea of what to do with Reigns that would still seem really special. But there's no way Drew should win, and it should just be a transition championship reign, and then Drew just loses it back in January. Like, I don't think Drew having a few months of being full-time and available on both Raw and SmackDown to be a champion is worth ending Reigns' reign just to give the belt back to him, say, at the Rumble or at day one, so that then you can set him up as a champion defending at Mania. I just say keep it on Roman if you're going to do that. If Drew wins, it should feel like a passing of the torch where you build up Drew as Roman's equal so that you can do a Roman-Drew rematch down the line, and it really feels like a major, major moment in WWE history. Jake, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think they're – I'm still of the mind that they're probably going to be splitting these titles up sooner than later. If for no other reason than I think they are probably feeling some pressure from television partners to do so. But I think the idea that, you know, you're presenting is a logical one. If you're going to choose Drew McIntyre to be the guy that unseats a 2-year title reign from the biggest star in professional wrestling at the moment, he has to be somebody that you're willing to commit to and not just somebody that you're committing to short term. But I think there's also a lot of, you know, potential stories that can be told with him being so committed to being a fighting champion that he runs himself ragged and leaves himself vulnerable for someone to steal one of those titles away from him in the right situation. And so I think the scenario that you're laying out where eventually you're going to reach a gigantic rematch, can still happen, but you can also still pull one of those titles away from him in the process and allow him to hold that Universal Championship for as long as they want him to, until they're ready to go back to a Roman rematch.
All right, very good. Jay, appreciate the call. Always good hearing from you.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, cool. Have a good weekend. All right, let's go next to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And by the way, we got a roundtable segment coming up with Javier in just a bit, too. Sean, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight and the Clash tomorrow?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to say, Wade, it's always good to talk to you, man. Jake's good to talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to go, and Wade, you just brought it up earlier. guys, if you're not VIP, you have to, because you're missing the fix with Todd every week. Todd was very passionate. I listened to it this morning, very passionate. I want to push back a little bit on Todd. He was just, you know, saying it the way he was passionately saying it, but he was, you know, saying, well, I just think it's crazy to think that Drew should win. And I'm not crazy. I think there's a reason why Drew should win, and it's because I think Drew is a big star. Yes, Roman is a bigger star. I don't think, is debating that Roman's a bigger star, but it's because of the way he's been booked. Drew can't help that he's been booked really poorly especially the last year. I mean, I don't think he wanted to do a lot of the stuff he's done. I just think he was trying to be a team player and do what he's supposed to do and do it the best he can. And so I just think 2 years ago when Drew won the title, it, of course, we all know it was a very the tough circumstance when crowds had to go away. It was really unfortunate. I think at that point, Drew was just as big a star as close to as big a star as Roman was. I think the fans were totally behind him before, when they went away. He had such an intimate moment when he won the title over Brock in the Performance Center. And I just think it's not a bad idea if Drew wins. I don't think, you know, Todd, I love you. I don't think it's a bad idea that Drew wins. I don't think it's, I don't know what I'm talking about to think Drew wins. I think Roman is, if he wins, I'm okay with it because I think they've got big plans still to come. And I'm assuming, and I'm pretty sure Cody's going to be the one to beat Roman at WrestleMania. That's kind of what I'm thinking right now. I don't even think they're going to The Rock, but it's still possible because it's in Hollywood. But I think Cody's the one they're going to look forward to beat Roman, and that's fine. But to think, I just wanted to say, I just think to say that Drew can't win or it's ridiculous to think he should win, I don't agree with that. And I just wanted to throw that out there because it was fun. Todd was going off on it, and I respect it because he's got a lot of knowledge on the business, and I love the way I enjoy the show, like, immensely. But I just wanted to say my piece on that. Am I right, Wade? Or help me out here. Am I way off base, or what do you think?
Well, I mean, Todd's argument is you got something special with Roman, and he's attributing some of WWE's success this year, just sort of aesthetically and critically, but also in terms of numbers, in terms of ticket sales, that WWE has a centerpiece attraction who's been protected and seems like an era-defining special star. And you don't, you know, it's like if you're, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but if things are going well, you don't go for the quick short-term adjustment because it will maybe jostle things for the better for the next month or two and shake things up and reconfigure things. If you've got this rock solid, special, good thing going with the Bloodline and Roman along with, and I'm not recreating all of Todd's argument. You got to listen, or, you know, his stance. You got to listen to him to know what he said. But another aspect of it is if you're going to have Roman lose, make sure it's to the next guy or someone who just is strong as Drew comes across right now, somebody who's even in a stronger position to really benefit. So there isn't, in this case, there might be a risk of, oh, Drew's champ again. He's been there before. He'll lose it, and then he'll win it again. He's just one of those guys who's always around, as opposed to, you know, you try to just, like, make Cody or make Braun Breaker or whomever, you know, whoever you think can be shot to the top. And I mean, it's an absolute compelling argument, and in a way you can't argue against it if you agree to the premise that Todd believes is self-evident, which is Roman Reigns is something special, you don't mess with it, and he is a difference maker, and having him lose to Drew or anyone right now does more damage than good, at least in the medium and long term, and maybe even in the short term. Jake, your thoughts?
No, I think, you know, Todd makes a strong case, and I think that's something that probably weighs heavily on Triple H as well. But I think the idea that Roman suddenly loses a lot of value without the title is probably something you have to consider and explore too. You know, are there other stories with Roman that you can tell that maximize his star power that don't require him to have a world championship? And that's not a reason to take the title off of him, but it's something that mitigates the supposed impact of having someone beat him. And you know, is Drew necessarily the guy that's going to be carrying WWE for years from this point forward? I don't really have the answer to that. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Cody is that guy either. You know, and that's the person that somebody that a lot of people have pegged as the obvious choice to be the one who unseats him at WrestleMania next year if The Rock isn't available. And so I don't think there are any perfect choices here because one of WWE's problems stretching back, you know, a decade at this point is they haven't created enough stars and lined enough people up to where you could say, okay, if you know, if Roman goes down with an injury right now, you know, are we going to lose 15% of our audience? You know, I don't think so.
Yep.
But I think there's, you know, I don't think the, you know, that Roman is necessarily the linchpin to keeping the audience, because on weeks that he's not there, you know, they kind of maintain the same television audience. I don't think he's necessarily singularly responsible for driving the numbers up. I think we've seen a bit of a resurgence and the product heating up, mostly because of factors outside of the television product that have seen, you know, people paying more attention. It's been, I mean, you know, we had that, you know, Cody injury, you know, I guess 3 or 4 months ago. And if you told me it was in 2020, I would believe you, because there's been such a crazy set of circumstances play out, and you know, time seems to be moving incredibly slowly because of the pace of news. And so it's just one of those things where I don't think it would be the end of the world if Roman Reigns lost tomorrow and you know, you made an attempt at making somebody like Drew McIntyre. But I don't know what you know, what Roman's plans are. You know, is he filming something in 3 months? Is he, you know, like, there's a lot of things involved with Roman signing a part-time contract that I think Paul Levesque is probably having to consider right now, because it seems clear to me that Roman is trying to plan his future, and that future isn't 100% WWE.
All right, very good. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, and you brought up a great point, Jake, and that's kind of what I was talking, because, you know, Todd's talked about it before. If you listen to this, you know, he talks about building stars, and Roman's, you know, one of the only few stars right now, and Drew could be built. I mean, he was a big star and then, you know, had bad circumstance, and he had some bad booking, but, and they've done a good job, again, like you said earlier, to rehab him a little bit. I think he could still be okay if he does lose this match, but I think it would really help to build him into one of those bigger stars, and he's looks like Roman. I think he's a better wrestler than Roman. I mean, just honestly, if you're just looking at them in the ring, they're both good, but I think Drew's even better. And so it's going to be fun. I'm intrigued by it. And I, going back to, and the part-time thing, you know, always worries me too, is, you know, you keep the title on Roman this long and he's just not on TV a lot. And I do want a champion to be on TV. If it's one, just the WWE champion, just the Universal champion, whoever it is, I do want them to be on TV more. But I did have a couple questions about the show in general. The crowd was actually a lot hotter than I expected, just because it's such a long night. They're having to be there for, you know, 4 hours or 5 hours, whatever it was. And they were actually really hotter than I expected. Did that come across to you guys, you know, watching the show? Because usually they're kind of like, you can tell they're dead. They're just kind of like, you know, another couple hours. But they were into, like you said, they were into most everything. I was intrigued. I was glad to see the crowd really getting into stuff, because it was a good show. What did y'all think about that?
Jake, I was going to bring it up earlier, and I didn't want to get not bogged down, but I didn't want to cover too much early on. But I was going to bring up that this was one of the better tape shows, I think, in terms of the way it was post-produced and what Sean just brings up in terms of crowd energy and the choices that they made in terms of what they put on. You know, a couple short matches, a banger of a match between the Viking Raiders in the opener in New Day. And I thought it worked, and I think people who missed it, because it's like, oh, it's pre-taped, it won't be good. I think they missed a good solid SmackDown. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, aside from maybe Pittsburgh on Monday, which is a very quiet crowd, WWE crowds have been bringing the energy recently. It hasn't, you know, there was a period when the booking was really not going well, where it seemed like you would get more disinterested crowds than not. But I think the pace of the show has improved, and you know, the wrestlers have brought it in terms of match quality. And so I think it was a very good show. The presentation was good. It didn't seem like they had to edit too much in terms of, you know, being in post, or, you know, it didn't seem like they were injecting a whole bunch of canned audio, although it's difficult to tell at times, you know, depending on what you're looking at while you're hearing the crowd reaction. But, you know, it seemed like, just based on, you know, eyeballing the crowd during matches, that the people were even, you know, even at the end of the show with the Drew revenge segment, it seemed like people were plugged in, and that's a good sign. It's tough to keep your energy up for 4 hours, no matter what you're doing.
I did not read spoilers, but I'm curious if they just went bang, bang, bang with the content. You know, you have just the New Day Viking Raiders match, which they really, I mean, that was a good, exciting match. If the crowd was only there, you know, 2 hours at that point. And Raw's typically three, and then it was just, you know, couple squash matches, and then you got a big star in Ronda Rousey, and you got the big angle with Drew and Reigns. There just wasn't a lot of chance for the crowd to just sort of, you know, die for their energy level to just die off noticeably, and then you can post produce crowd noise too, which, you know, they may have done.
Mm-hmm. And the video packages. You know, there were quite a few video packages and backstage segments that the crowd may not have had to sit through. You know, the live experience may not have been a full 4 hours if they only had to tape, you know, 3 hours and 15 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, yep. All right, Sean, what else?
Yeah, and then I was going to I did think it was funny when Happy Corbin brought up the challenge and Shinsuke came out. I was like, that tells you how slim the roster is when you have Shinsuke as a surprise against Happy Corbin, which we've already seen like five times. I just thought that was really hilarious. But I wanted to ask you this, the Clash of the Castle question, because obviously it's tomorrow, so it's a big deal. I just want to know what you guys were thinking, you know, a little deeper as far as the Seth and Riddle overall build, and, you know, who you guys think, again, should win and will win, because I think they've done such a good job with that match. I mean, just the build up to it, to me, has been some of the better building WWE's done in a while, you know, including the Drew Roman. I mean, this whole, I guess all the three, big three matches technically, but especially Seth and Riddle, I feel like they both need wins, but I think, so I'm really curious to hear what you guys think, because I just think it's a good build. It's going to be a really good match, and I'm really intrigued to see the show. Wade, I appreciate all you do, man. Like I said, go VIP, guys. If you're not, you're crazy. It's just going to be so much stuff going on this weekend, so much to listen to. Jake, I love what you and Jason do on .NET. You guys are, you know, two of my favorites as well, and I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Cool. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate the kind words, as always. All right. We'll move on to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, top that. How you doing?
Hey, I was really listening, really, what he was saying. I was just watching that. I just said, well, he was done talking. Well, I don't listen to other people, but they had their thoughts, because people have different opinions on this story. But what I want to talk about and move on. So that's what I usually do.
Wait,
when I wait around.
Kyle, hang on. So you call in to share your opinions with others, but you're admitting you have no interest in hearing what other people say, what their views are, learning from them. I'd rather have you be honest than feel like you should be, you know, different than honest, but I don't know what that says, but go ahead.
Having people have opinions, I kind of listen to them and don't really honest, whatever. But what I want to get to really is this Roman Reigns title run throughout his entire 2 years, pretty much has been, now, look, I'm not a Roman Reigns fan. I never have been, never will be. I enjoyed some of his matches that he had with Finn Balor, with AJ Styles, you know, back in 2016, and Owens and Rollins and all that stuff. But it's to the point for me where it ended up being bad. It was, you know, just not interesting, really, was him with both championships, I think it was. And it was like, okay. I understand they don't want him to be around on TV, just fine. But there has been a point where him as champion for this long and not even being around. I keep going back to Becky Lynch because it's the best comparison I can think of. Now, it is really different because I'm a big Becky Lynch fan, so based off this for favoritism. But if this was Becky Lynch 2 years as a double champion, hey, I just can't see that. But even if that happened, it would have been great, because whatever. People would crab all over it. So because of who Becky is and how the character she's playing. With Reigns being this character, it's like, could be fine, him being what he said he is, but it's just, I don't know, to me it's to the point where it's just, enough is enough, I feel like, to me. And like, if McIntyre doesn't win, it's going to be Karrion Kross. And I think, do people really want to see heel versus Karrion Kross and Roman Reigns? How will people will feel about that if that ends up being the match they end up doing? So what do you think about that? Just say if that's going to be the match, how will people will react to that if it's Karrion Kross versus Roman Reigns for the championship?
Jake, you want to take that? I wasn't really listening to Kyle. I don't really care what callers have to say. I just have my opinions. Do you have any thoughts, Jake?
If they go with Kross and Roman, I think people will just cheer for Roman Reigns. I do too. I think there's enough people who are on the fence with Roman anyway, who, you know, even though he's a heel, enjoy his act, and they enjoy the presence that he has when he's on screen or in the arena with them. And so, yeah, I think it would be fairly straightforward at that point. If they go with, you know, what you would think would be heel versus heel, people would just side with Roman, and that would be the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, part of if Drew wins, it's what external forces prompted it, and what do you have next that you think people will care about? And what are the alternatives? And I mean, Karrion Kross is, I think under Paul Levesque on the main roster, big arena, not bogging down takeover specials as the main eventer who, whether he had injuries or not, wasn't really taking bumps and had limitations in the ring and had kind of this one-dimensional cartoon character, facial expression, promo style. I just think he's better. He's a better fit under the context of big arena ring entrance with Scarlett, with hair, with a new range of relatable and authentic looking facial reactions. And, you know, the limitation we talked about earlier, just the size, you know, is he, for the way he wrestles, is he a little bit too small to deliver as the character that he's playing? But if you get him away from Drew and Roman, once you establish he's sort of in their league or thinks he is, then you can, you know, move him to Johnny Gargano, you know, for instance, as a possible opponent, or again, Shinsuke as a babyface. Like, you can, that can work, you know, and size-wise, and I think it'd still seem intimidating. That's just to, you know, grab onto two names. I know, you know, Gargano's over on Raw and stuff, but I think there's things that you can do with him. You can eventually have him in a tag team where some of his shortcomings in terms of his ring work can be covered up with a different kind of partner who does different things. So I think I think the circumstances are better both on the main roster with a different type of talent to work with in the ring, not pressured to be the main eventer, and featured by Paul Levesque instead of McMahon, who gets him more. But I don't think, all that said, that you can headline a pay-per-view with him against Drew or against Roman. And if they're building up a triple threat, and that's why Kross is talking to both of them, I don't know. I mean, I guess I want to be open-minded and see what they have in mind, but I just don't think Roman should be in triple threat matches. And it seems like Kross is beneath him at this point. And you're playing with fire by having Roman get cheered, even contextually.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're kind of running into one of the big caveats of building a character like Roman Reigns seemingly at the expense of everyone else. And that's not to say that his performances haven't merited his current position, because they have. It's just that when you unify the titles, now essentially you are stuck with having to force every character to measure up to Roman Reigns. And if they had, you know, if they hadn't unified the championships at WrestleMania and they still had a world championship over on Raw, then you might be able to position somebody like Karrion Kross, in a world title scenario where you can kind of curate the opponents that he faces so that he doesn't run into the Drew McIntyres or the Roman Reigns or the Braun Strowmans of the world who make the upsides of his act seem to diminish to the background. And so I think that may be an argument, you know, whether they, you know, they go with the 30-day defense and they strip Roman of one of the championships, or they have Drew win tomorrow and finagle some way to split the titles down the road. I think it offers them enough flexibility to where you don't end up in scenarios where it's like, well, nobody really feels like they fit, you know, like they measure up to Roman, and so we can't really justify ever moving the title off of him. And it's a self-inflicted problem that was created with the all or nothing match at WrestleMania. But I do think it has had downstream impacts that have made booking the company a little bit more difficult than it needs to be.
All right, very good. Well, now shift to Javier. Javier, you won't be surprised for me to tell you this, but Kyle already dropped off. He has no interest in what you have to say.
I kind of figured.
Sean's still listening. Mike's still listening. I see them on the switchboard. Kyle hung up as soon as he knew I was done with him. I'm not
funny. I wonder if he listens back. I doubt it.
Oh, I doubt it. But he's, I mean, you know, we get, you know, part of the fun of, not everybody gets it, but part of the fun of a call-in show is the different kind of characters, you know, the different types of people who call up. And I mean, I grew up on talk radio and having regulars who, you know, are, I don't know. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Personalities.
Anyway, go ahead.
Personalities.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's more generic than what I was biting my tongue on, but yeah.
Hey, Jake,
anyway.
How's it going?
Not bad. How are you out here?
Hanging in there. Man, I was going to push back heavy on what Todd said, but I think all the callers and you guys already did pretty much cover everything I was going to for the most part.
Yeah. Well, good. Yeah. So, what have I left out of Todd's argument that you want to rebut?
No. My original question opens up with the idea that, Roman Reigns has all this cachet that he's built up. And you're going to want to spend it somewhere. And I'm just looking to something that you said, Jake. You said, is Drew going to be the guy that's going to be the guy in 4 years? And that's a good question. Like, you know, you don't know. But I'm going to ask you, is Roman Reigns going to be the guy in 4 years?
No.
Yeah, no, I don't believe he will be. Maybe not even in 2 years. I think it really depends on what opportunities for him open up outside the company.
Yeah, so you know, that cachet, you know, who that's the question I ask. Who? Because you have Drew, you have Cody. When this question first arose, because I've been thinking about this since WrestleMania, what was it, 37? Since then, because that was like the moment to coronate McIntyre as your champion. I know I keep harping on that, but I think that was one of the biggest missed opportunities. And so, you know, once they announced this, I'm like, okay, now you have a second shot. When they announced this, Vince was still running the show, and they continued with the hokiness of his character. It felt like they were not getting him there. Todd is right that he was lukewarm, tepid. They have heated him up ever since, you know, he dropped the sword. He really heated up, much hotter than I thought that he was going to get. He's not boiling over, which is what you would have preferred to have for this moment. But ultimately, that's the question. Is Drew the guy that you're going to hitch your wagon to for the next 2-3 years? Is he going to be the guy holding down the fort while Roman Reigns pops in every two, you know, three, you know, major pay-per-views to then, you know, stir the stuff up like, you know, like Lesnar has been for Roman Reigns. So, you know, and if it's not Drew, then who? I mean, you know, like I said, Cody, but do you trust Cody in terms of like, yeah, he's super hot, but do you trust him for a long period of time considering the fact that he essentially turned the entire audience that loved him in AEW against them, or at least half of them. Do you trust that? Do you, you know, Bron Breakker? I mean, I don't know. I haven't watched NXT, you know, I haven't even seen him outside of still pictures. So I don't know whether he is the next guy you can be, but that's the thing. They have to create stars. And, you know, Todd mentioned about a moment, you know, that's, and in general, I agree with him that, you know, it's about creating a moment and popping the crowd for that moment. But the thing is that
moments are also, you know, we're not talking about a moment. We're talking about the moment. You, Wade, you mentioned that McIntyre's already hot, you know, compared to the rest of the roster. That he doesn't have that. He's the one who's closest to Roman Reigns in that spot. But a victory over Roman Reigns could propel him to, you know, catalyze everything into being the guy, being the John Cena, being the Hulk Hogan, being the being the Roman Reigns. That part is obviously subjective, but just throwing away the argument that why would you go with Roman, you know, that's not you know, there are reasons why, because you to create the guy that's going to cover the things, you know, cover up from going forward. There was another point on that, the idea of him like feuding, because he posited the idea of McIntyre feuding with Cross while Roman Reigns feuds with somebody else. And you guys broached the subject that is he even going to be around? Because usually right after SummerSlam, this is around the time that we've always gotten the doldrums when you've had the part-time champion with Lesnar, where he would disappear and only pop back up for the Saudi show, then disappear and pop up near the beginning of the year for the build towards Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a similar thing. Plus, we've been hearing grumblings of people getting tired of having essentially, you know, considering already Roman Reigns as absentee champion. And at some point, same thing happened with Lesnar, and things boiled over to the point where people were disinterested in Brock Lesnar. So, you know, so that's also something you kind of want to head off. So those are like arguments. I agree with the pro keeping the Roman Reigns thing on it. They're both, but you know, there are also strong positives on the other side too.
I go back to my analogy of a GM having to trade a couple of players he loves for one player,
yeah,
or three players. You know, you're never happy to make the final call because you're giving up something you really value. And I just think the finish of this match is giving something up. And we have to keep in mind, again, I underline, this is not Paul Levesque's match. He inherited this. And that, I think that gives him not a little bit of a mulligan, in the sense of a little bit of one, in that he might just want to get past this. But he also, this might be a defining moment for him too. You know, I just don't know. And I think there's conflicting signals. I think there's risk in either outcome. And I'm not unreceptive at all to Todd's strong argument, because I do think pro wrestling is a star-driven business. And I think AEW would be better off. It's like Jason Powell and I were talking earlier in the week on the free flagship, the Wake Up Wrestling Podcast flagship, you know, like just like talking about, could Kenny have been the guy? Can he still be the guy? And it's not because he would have ever been my first choice, or he wouldn't have been my first choice. That's not even the point. As much as he was an EVP and a big star, and he's main evented big shows, and he's really good, and yet he's just another of 6 or 10 top-tier guys that have worked main events for AEW. And so WWE has accomplished something that it's easy to take for granted. Like, it's an NFL team with a great quarterback. You take it for granted until you spend 16 years trying to find another one who can actually complete a pass that with confidence, you know, and clutch. And Roman is that guy. But he's not perfect. You know, he's not a perfect guy to have. Hogan was willing to go on the road and when he was on top and earn his money, you know, at the arenas, you know, selling tickets. And Roman has a reduced schedule, and he isn't going to be a guy who wrestles on TV much at all at this point. And that adds to his mystique, but it also takes away some of the value. You know, he's that, you know, collectible that you can't play with because it's wrapped up. You know, he's valuable, but he's sort of wrapped up and doing backstage segments and promos, but Drew's going to go out there and be a workhorse for you and try to earn his keep that way if you give him the belt. So I don't know. Jake, jump on in.
Well, I do think there's still interesting storytelling that you can do with Roman Reigns and the Bloodline absent the unified championships. You know, the breakdown of the Bloodline, you know, potentially losing all of their titles, for instance, is, you know, the downfall and perhaps the eventual resurgence of the Bloodline. What is a story that you can tell over a period of several months, you know, and I think the, I don't think we need to be dogmatic in the sense that star power is this singular thing that resides within championships, because I think Roman Reigns has gotten to the point where he's transcended the need to even hold championships. He has a presence with or without those titles. Do they enhance that presentation? Of course they do. But I don't think it's necessary for him to have meaningful stories being told with his character on television. And if he has other things happening in his life, whether it's he wants to be home more often with his family, or he has Hollywood projects and he wants to, you know, he wants to take off the slowest part of the year and come back in November, December, then that's fine. You know, I think the company would do well without him, particularly if they continue to add more interesting pieces to the puzzle. But it is a question that I think the company has forced itself to grapple with, because they haven't done a great job of creating stars, and they've basically mortgaged all the star power that they had to put Roman in the position that he's in. And so now it feels like you have this Fabergé egg holding your unified championships. Like, well, if we disturb, you know, the golden one at the top of the card, does that cause, you know, this thing to fall apart? And I think they have enough underneath that it wouldn't, but I can see why you would argue that it's not a very good idea.
All right. Hubby, you're back too.
Yeah, and you mentioned risk weight, and that's kind of like the way I boil it down to, is that at the end of the day, it's a cost-benefit analysis between the two of them and what they believe is going to be more because I think Roman holding the belt, more valuable for the near term. I think that Roman Drew McIntyre being the one that topples Roman Reigns, I think, is more valuable for the longer term. That's how I balance it. So, and I want to keep on the same topic of creating stars, because that dovetails with the idea, because, you know, there's been a lot of pushback online with Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah winning the tag titles. And that was, you know, and that was for the similar thing. I'm actually fairly in agreement. I mean, I think that there's some arguments you can make against it, but with the general idea of, you know, when you go with, you know, either Io Shirai and Io Sky and Dakota Kai, you know, giving them the titles, yeah, you're adding to an already existing situation, adding more heat to something that's already hot. But on the other hand, by giving it to Raquel Rodriguez, and I'm ignoring Aaliyah, this is all about Raquel Rodriguez, in order to try to use the titles to help elevate her to the next stage, you know, and by, you know, so yes, you could get a hotter act by combining the two, which, by the way, is what I've always said, that's Vince McMahon's philosophy of the spotlight idea of putting as much stuff in one match, unifying the belts between Lesnar and Reigns, that sort of thing. Just throw everything into this one thing to have this one thing draw. But then when you do that too much, you know, the rest of the – that's how you end with no one else getting over, because all your – you know, your entire – the entire machine is working for this one thing. You know, so, yeah, you do diffuse. You do lose something by not putting the title on Io Shirai I keep calling her by her original role name – Io Sky and Dakota Kai. But, you know, you hopefully can build Raquel Rodriguez on the other side. And I say hopefully because we've seen that fail, because I think that's what happened with in AEW when the Young Bucks lost to was it Acclaimed or Top Flight?
Private Party.
Yeah, Private Party.
Yeah.
Or Private Party. Wow, I missed it. when they lost the Private Party in the first tournament, in theory it made sense, because, you know, Young Bucks were your hottest act, your hottest tag team act, and they could go feud with another tag team drawing there, while you give someone, in this case it was SCU, the opportunity to be hot, you know, elsewhere, it ended up not working for multitude of reasons, because, you know, what the Young Bucks were doing were the Dark Order, for one. Just because it didn't work didn't mean that it was not a, you know, wasn't a reason for it.
Jake, any thoughts?
Well, I'm not convinced that, you know, Raquel and Aaliyah are going to hold those titles for very long. It was fairly clear after the pinfall when Dakota turned to the referee and was on camera saying, "I wasn't the legal person," that the story wasn't over. And so I think that could be something that gets mixed up pretty quickly. But I do, you know, generally agree with the idea that they have to continue down the path of creating new stars. And sometimes that means making decisions that may not seem immediately popular in the moment, but you have, you know, a point in time, a month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe even longer down the road that you're trying to get to, that will, you know, that will hopefully you can keep the audience at that point along for the ride with you. And that needs to happen more often. You can't make every decision with the short term or with, you know, the loudest portion of your fan base in mind every time. And hopefully that's the direction we see Paul Levesque move. I hope that there's more of a long game in play than we saw with Vince McMahon, because the years and years of tearing up scripts and rewriting the shows, up to and including while they were happening on the air, has done a lot of damage to the product.
I'm curious, you know, how Paul Levesque plans for the future and how we see, because right now if Braun Strowman's brought in, or Bray Wyatt's brought back. By the way, Bray Wyatt's the X Factor for tomorrow too. Maybe he shows up and attacks Roman Reigns and costs Roman the match, or costs Drew the match, or who knows? I'm just throwing it off.
Remind me, I got a crazy theory.
Oh yeah, okay, good. You message me a crazy theory sometimes. Occasionally, I read them. it's always fun. I always read them. Right now, I won't call it Band-Aids, but it's like, you know, pulling veterans from the bench. But at some point, you know, it's use the NBA term, the veterans minimum, you know, like where you have the veterans minimum exception, where you can bring a veteran in, give them good money, and it doesn't count against the cap or however that works, because they want to reward. The whole idea of that was to reward older players with valuable positions, rather, because there's sort of a bias against older players towards younger players. So that was sort of something veterans negotiated. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but it almost feels like that's Paul. He's going to the familiar right now. At some point, he needs that next crop of talent that he scouted and developed either from the indie scene or from their own internal development, and start building for the future. By the way, another name we shouldn't ignore is Theory, Austin Theory, when it comes to how things could play out tomorrow, or just in terms of who might they hold out. Why would they make the decision tomorrow? Because they're very high on Austin Theory in WWE, and they see him as a potential top guy. They're not convinced he's going to be, but they definitely are have that in their mindset. So does tomorrow's finish play into that? Like, well, when Roman loses, we want it to be against a babyface Theory 2.5 years from now. And we're just committed to that. And that might explain a lot of decisions that some people might find head-scratching or boring or predictable, or it could go the other way. We want Theory to get to the top quicker. That's going to be beating Drew McIntyre and when Drew is champ, say at SummerSlam next year or something. So I'm curious to see in men's and women's division how we see Triple H start developing the next in line off the bench to come in and play major roles. Anyway, that was the thought that crossed my mind as you were talking and Jake, you were talking, but Javier, back to you.
Yeah, just the crazy theory I had, and I don't think it will pan out, because it doesn't work with what they're doing with the Usos and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. So that's why it won't pan out. But I was thinking, what if the TikTok is actually a reference to the end of Reigns' reign, and that it's actually Karrion Kross working with Drew, and we end up with a double heel turn, with Karrion Kross helping Drew win, and all of this orchestrated by Paul Heyman, who made a call to Karrion Kross because he blames Roman Reigns for, you know, not protecting him against Brock. Because Paul Heyman,
Jake,
his name was dropped today.
I'd love to see it just so I can watch my Twitter timeline melt down when Kross cost Roman Reigns the championship.
Oh,
but that is a crazy theory, but not an entirely insane one. I hadn't discounted the Paul Heyman factor in how he may come back and what strings he might be pulling. But I hadn't thought that he would be joining with Drew, but that's an interesting possibility.
If you're going to turn somebody, ideally you're turning somebody who's a hot babyface or heel into the opposite, as opposed to turning them because they're flat. And they've gotten Drew hot enough as a babyface, I think, of the video packages and correcting course and some things with his character and just the way he's carrying himself. It would be shocking and kind of jarring, but I think in a way that would grab people's attention. Yeah. I mean, I have to kind of think through the ramifications of it. I mean, it's crossed my mind. Like, are we within a year, year and a half of Drew as a heel and Roman as a face? And is part of what happens tomorrow, the idea being, don't worry, the next time they wrestle, it's not going to be just a replay of Roman as a heel in the Bloodline with Heyman against Drew as the same babyface. And sometimes you do a finish because it's sort of the end of one character's journey in that role, and you can afford to do it, before you go a completely different direction with them and kind of just hit the reset button. So, yeah, and again, I mean, I think Vince McMahon was not always predictable, but more predictable than Paul Levesque, because we just don't have a lot of history yet. And I think he has his philosophies, but he's still going to be figuring things out as he goes. He's in his early 50s. He's, you know, by the time he's in his late 60s, if he's still in the same position, you know, he'll probably be predictable and set in his ways. But I think right now he's probably listening to a lot of different people's ideas. Javier, back to you.
And just to add evidence to the to what I think is an implausible possibility, that it was a oxymoron. But okay, so, you know what I mean.
I caught it.
Plausible implausibility. I'm like, wow, that hurt my head. But just to add some evidence to that, Kross's promos have been basically saying that you were the chosen one and it didn't work out, and then he starts talking about that he's here to fix the timeline.
Yeah, so to elaborate on that. What do you think that means? Because I want to think I will be rewarded by paying attention to what feels like spooky platitudes by Karrion Kross, because I've become so numb to that being the case with Aleister Black and Bray Wyatt, and now it's just Karrion Kross doing the same thing. But do you think there's something to extrapolate from what he's saying that actually kind of might fit what we see tomorrow and beyond?
Well, if he is actually working with or for Drew McIntyre, that he, you know, mm-hmm. that McIntyre's, you know, he was the chosen one. Things didn't work out. Things fell apart. And by fixing, you know, quote unquote, fixing the timeline, he's going to put him into the top spot where he should have been by now. And he's assisting and putting him there while Roman Reigns, who was the handpicked guy who didn't deserve mm-hmm. what he has, because they kept mm-hmm. pushing him despite everything to the contrary, saying that people weren't buying Roman Reigns yet, you know, and now he has this moment. So you're correcting what would have been the timeline in terms of, you know, Drew on top with, you know, Roman Reigns beneath. So, I mean, just, I'm saying this is like very improbable, but if it happens,
yeah.
I come out as a genius. So that's a plus. it's a fun speculation. And the thing is that what added to it was when they did bring up the wise man, and I'm like, you know what, I could see Heyman being petty, and like as soon as he got hurt and he was left there and nobody looked up after him, because I mean he was lying there for quite a while.
Yeah,
that, you know, I could see Heyman basically saying, yeah, you know, yeah, that wasn't cool, Roman, and then turning on him, and then also want to bring up someone that no one's talked about, but what's the name of the other USO? Who's in developmental?
Oh yeah, the
Solo Sikoa.
Solo Sikoa, yep.
Yeah, so that could also be something that someone could come into play too. So.
I don't want to move off the Heyman thing because I think it is intriguing. They haven't mentioned his name until this week, yeah. I don't think. I don't remember mentioning it until in quick passing in a segment this week. But yet Heyman narrating the Reigns vignettes, and those were fresh. So that takes away some of the idea. But, I mean, that could be the red herring on Paul. Oh, I'll come in to do it. But it's part of the plan. I'm intrigued by that possibility. Nothing that you said just jumps out to me as – wow, why didn't I think of that? That's obviously where they're going, or that would be a really good way to go. But it is, until the fact that they did mention him a little bit this week and he narrated the packages, it felt like, are they laying the groundwork for that to be something? When we look back, it'd be like, oh, yeah, they're just, you know, he was offended at the time, and he offended even more so that no one's talking about him and no one seems to miss him or whatever. So, you can build on that if you want. I don't think they're going to, but, you know, I can't say with certainty they're not.
Yeah, I missed those spots because I pulled the Todd and fast-forwarded them.
yeah.
Because I started late, so I had to catch up before the end of the show. So I was I fast-forwarded those. So I'm like, I know what they're going to talk about. And I didn't pick up that it was Paul Heyman, but, you know. But, yeah, I mean, and I would say if this were Vince McMahon's booking, I'd say, oh, you can still believe it because that's the kind of detail they don't pay attention to. But, I mean, now they have because, I mean, did you catch Cole when they announced Roman Reigns and then they cut to him driving up and Cole said, he goes, well, that's convenient that he arrived just on time.
You know what, though? Normally I would be a stickler for that, but I can totally see Roman like hanging out at a nightclub until like 10 minutes before his spot. And he says, driver, bring me there. And then he just waits like outside the building or a little bit away. And it's like, all right, bring me there now. You know, like I can almost see him wanting that moment. It didn't come across as happenstance. It almost felt like Reigns planning the big arrival, like somebody who's intentionally late for a party and might sit a block away waiting till they know they'll be the center of attention. And there's a bunch of people there to look at them when they walk in the door.
Yeah.
Cole didn't break the fourth wall. Cole didn't break the fourth wall and point out that it was the same truck with the same license plate that he had last week.
Yes.
And those little things, there was during the Pete Dunne Kaiser match. Well, sorry, the Butch Kaiser match. He did kind of obliquely reference Pete Dunne, you know, because this was a different match from the ones that we've seen Butch in before. And he said, oh, this looks like the old Butch.
Yeah. And it did.
So I got a kick out of that. Yeah. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah.
And there was another one. I forgot what it was, though. I do want to bring up the Ronda Rousey thing, though, because I thought this was I mean, I didn't think she was as clunky as usual. I think she really hit, like, about on 85% of what she said, and the 15% that she didn't hit on, she was at least in the ballpark. She seemed so much more free and, like, you know, open and, like, not, like, tightly wound. She kind of felt still that she was hurried and she had to get through what she was saying quickly, but not as bad as other times. And she felt like much more comfortable. That was what I was looking for. She felt more comfortable than she pretty much, I think I've ever seen her be. She also was playful. So pseudo agree with you, Wade, that I was, you know, because when this everything was going down, and so was my brother. My brother texted me, says, "Who's the heel here?" you know, so I had the same thought, and I'm like, because I'm like in between the two of them, and I it just got to the point that I was having so much fun with what's going on. I'm like, no, screw it, just I'm gonna, you know, I know that Pierce doesn't deserve it, but you know, I like badass wrestlers doing badass things out of control. And what I think it's going to end up happening is I think she does team up with Baszler, but I don't think they're going to – I think they're going to portray them as essentially tweeners. I know that's got a bad term, but I think more along the lines of, you know, like a chaotic force that they, you know, and they like just like screwing with people, and they follow no rules, and, you know, like to fight. I think something similar to how like Moxley is portrayed in AEW. So they could basically, you know, go up against baby faces or heels as needed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, fraught with peril, almost all the time. And I think it probably would be in this instance. I think people just want to have a reason to like, or not like, you know, in a pro wrestling context, but, that might be the best way to square the hole that is Ronda Rousey's personality. You know, it's just,
well,
she's a big star and bring on everybody.
Well, that's the thing. I think the reason it might work in this case is because, like you said, she almost comes across as heelish, but when she's just beating up people, even people who don't deserve it, like peers, people like it, you know? So, you know, I'll even bring up Sasha Banks. You know, Sasha Banks to me is a heel, and I think her best role is to be portrayed as a heel and let people like her as a heel and cheer her on as a heel, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's like the best way to do Rousey, because my problem is with her is when, you know, when they did the heel, the little bit of the heel run thing was more like she was just, you know, it wasn't like, she obviously wasn't having fun, but like in a term of like, hey, let's just go, you know, like essentially like, I mean, if you're aware of the Harley Quinn character, that kind of thing, like Harley and Poison Ivy going out a night on the town, you know, and wreck the town and having fun doing it. And yeah, they're bad guys, but you're enjoying what they're doing. So I think that, you know, so in a way they're still babyface, but like not morally. Like you're rooting for them, but not, you know, not, they're not necessarily in the moral, right?
Yeah. What do you think of that, Jake?
You know, I think that could work for Ronda, you know, whether it's a tweener or, you know, she's slotted as a heel, but, you know, there's still an element of the crowd that supports her just because of her notoriety and celebrity. That's probably bound to happen, but I would really love to see her just really lean into being a straight up menacing heel, because I think that's something that she's so far resisted in professional wrestling, because I think she does, you know, as you pointed out earlier, Wade, just really enjoy the adoration of fans. But I you know, so much of the, you know, of the baby faces in the women's division would benefit from having just a monster heel to work with, that I think it would be a lost opportunity if she never got that kind of run.
Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
Well, the only word of caution there is that I get the impression with a little bit that we've seen with her, like trying to portray, you know, and a kind of heel like that, is that I think that the heat that just by the person that she is, I think the heat that she generates when she tries to be a heel is more go away than as opposed to you want to see somebody, you know, finally beat her. Because I know I started feeling that, you know, her last time around.
I think she just hated being there. More than anything, like it seemed like she, you know, she got turned on by the fans, and she legitimately, you know, had a grudge with the fan base about that, and she stopped enjoying going to work, and that was pretty obvious before she, you know, she had her long hiatus when she, you know, she left to have a baby. But I think if she actually, you know, was convinced to embrace a heel run, it could work. But yeah, if it's back to that same scenario, it absolutely would be a disaster.
Javier, anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. Well, I have one word for you, Ed, and a couple more after that to explain what it is. 15.
15. I thought you were going to say dope.
Yes.
Why?
We're up to 15 matches for All Out. They added another one.
Oh, God. Okay. What'd they add?
They added the AAA mixed team title match.
Oh, because it had to. Yep, it had to be on that show. All right.
So 15 matches. I mean, it's pre-show, so you know, you don't count it as part of the show, but you know, it's. It is another match that.
But even so,
Ty's going to make you.
I think there should be a cap on star ratings for any show that has more than 9 matches, and I want to say 8, but we'll say 9, where the best a match can be graded for all of history is 4 stars. No matter what happens. If you have 10 or more matches, nothing can be 5 stars. Jake, are you with me on that? Should we start a petition?
I'm willing to write a rubric that handicaps star ratings for long pay-per-views. Yes, absolutely.
Very good. Thanks, Javier. Always a pleasure.
And check out the primers because I still have to finish now the AEW one, which is going to be more of a thesis and less of a primer. But, you know,
yes.
It is what it is.
So
the clash is already out.
PWTorch.com. Check out Javier's major event previews and his New Japan Pride podcast also. Javier, like I said, always a pleasure. Thanks for some good topics there and some good points of view, as always.
Thanks. Good night.
Yeah. Yep. You bet. Jake, is there anything else on this show that you particularly want to bring up that either we glossed over or didn't cover? I mean, you know, Maximum Male Models made their SmackDown in-ring debut, lost quickly. It seems like we kind of know where that act is going to land. Any thoughts on that or anything else?
I think most everything. I mean, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the Viking Raiders and New Day match, but I think that was a crowd pleaser. I have to imagine it's maybe the end of that feud, although it seems like it's perpetual in nature, where it could go on for another 6 months. But I hope not. And you know, the tag team division needs a shake up, and I'm hoping that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn can be the two that bring that change to that division.
Yeah, it was a really good match. Credit to all four involved. You know, sometimes just good matches are, what do you say about them? Hey, it was a good match. They had some good spots. They went all out for the set, which seemed a little corny at the beginning, but they utilized it well enough with the some of the wooden shields breaking or whatever they were. And the, what is that, the port deck? What do we call the front part of a Viking ship? I don't know.
Is it the bow? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, we could look it up. All right. Thanks, Jake. Appreciate it. Tell people a little bit more about what you do at ProWrestling.net and how they can hear more from you.
Yeah, you can check out my weekly television reports, typically AEW Dynamite, but occasionally Jason and Powell and I will swap, and I'll end up covering an edition of SmackDown or something. But I also appear on the .NET Weekly audio show, which is the weekly rundown of the news with myself and Jason Powell, and I also typically join him for the audio reviews of pay-per-views. So this weekend it'll just be AEW All Out, because Jason had some scheduling conflicts around that darn fantasy football, but typically it's both WWE and AEW pay-per-views we review together. But that's pretty much it for me. You can find me on Twitter at BarnettJake, and if you're interested in ProWrestling.net membership, the website with all of the information about the different types of memberships and tiers and whatnot is PWMembership.net.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody, for listening and downloading or streaming. And we'll talk to you all next time. Go VIP to hear all our coverage this weekend. We are not slowing down. You can check out Greg Parks' Wrestling Night in America this weekend on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Search PW Torch to download those shows for free. They'll be available about an hour and a half or so after each of the major events this weekend. We also have NXT coverage. We haven't given a lot of time to that, but they've got their show too. But if you want to go VIP and just get everything and have the ads and plugs removed and get all of our exclusive podcasts, including The Fix with Todd Martin, that's often a topic of conversation, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller for wrestling and other stuff. A lot of retweets and other comments, and just go straight pro wrestling. Follow our brand at PWTorch.